Okay.
Looks like it's functioning. Okay. 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 6. Who would read for me? Who would read for me? Bob?
When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets at Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," Elijah replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." He replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. The company of the prophets at Jericho went up to Elisha and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "so be quiet." So then Elijah said to him, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I passed out that chiasm for you. So how many people read chapter 2 and just saw that chiasm right off the bat? Got in about three lines and said, "This is a chiasm." I read the text probably six times and never saw it. And Tommy slipped this book out to me that had that chiasm in it. And I said, "What?" "What?" It's the whole chapter. The whole chapter is a chiasm. How many of you are really profoundly given over to chiasms and the study of them, and how helpful? And I'm seeing people look like me.
What's a chiasm?
What's a chiasm? That little thing I got.
How do you spell that?
Tim. How do you spell it? Okay. Looks, sounds like we're all kind of on the same page. But you know what? So I passed that out for you. Go ahead, Bob.
They're difficult to pick out. But once someone has pointed it out to you, they do become very interesting.
Very, very good. It's I was trying to think of something that where you do it with kids. If you're hiding something, or you're playing hide and seek, or you know, you with the children, and they just don't think to look in the nooks and crannies, you know, they're looking in the least conspicuous places, or the most conspicuous places, and you say, "Maybe you ought to go back and look here, and go back and look here, and maybe you might find what you're looking for." Maybe a chiasm's a little bit like that. They seem to benefit us a lot better once we've digested the text, and we go back. And I think I mentioned something to Isaiah because I don't know how to articulate it exactly, but maybe this is a literary pile of stones. Or a pile of rocks, like the children of Israel would pile up in places to be markers. And there would be a story associated with that marker. Now think about these kind of being a literary marker, you know, and we'll draw the chiasm like that. And of course, this is the summit, if you will. So this is what we're getting to. This is what's important. So once we digest the text, and we come back and we see anticipation along this line, don't we? I'm not going to spell it out here for you. And we see an opportunity for meditation along this line. So we can see it coming, and then we can see the thing happen, and then we can meditate on the turning back to normal, if you will. And life comes back to normal. I don't know how else to say that. I'd entertain any other thoughts, because chiasms are not my strong point, obviously. And obviously, they're not most of yours. But they are tools, and it's interesting to just, you know, when you get a chance, read those verses and see what they indicate to you. But chapter 2 does have that high point in there, and that's when Elijah is taken up. And so that's enough about that. So there's the discussion about the chiasm. That way, if Tommy asked me if we talked about the chiasm, I'll say, yes, we did. We learned very little, but we talked about it. Okay. Here I am. I lost my notes there for a second. Interesting, in verse 1, the writer presents this taking up quite matter of fact. I don't know if you noticed that when you first start reading it. And I just asked myself the question, I asked you the question, does Elijah and Elisha know about all this? If, when, what's going to take place? There's some common knowledge. I don't know exactly what the answer is to that. But there's some indication, some understanding that it seems that Elijah has. He's very determined and moving forward. And but there's not been any written, if you think about it, there's not been any written indication previously that Elijah would not die. If there's any been given to them, it was given to them and it wasn't penned for us to read. So it seems, though, that Elisha and the various prophets know what is coming, and maybe just without the details. I think there was some marked being astounded when that did take place. And I think if we were all there, we would all be taken back by what took place before their eyes, too. So I think there's an inkling in them of what's happening, but maybe not exactly when and not exactly how. And, of course, these sons of the prophets, they have information, too, don't they, that's obviously been given to them by God or someone else in the know. So Elijah tells Elisha to stay at Gilgal while he goes to Bethel by God's direction. You know, God has told him, you know, man, God bossed him around a lot, didn't he? He was always, go here, go there, go here. You ever notice that? He was like the disappearing prophet. He'd be one place and poof, he'd be someplace else. And this is more of the same taking place here in this chapter 2. He's instructing him to go to these three or four different places and each time asking Elisha to stay behind. Stay behind. So when he asks him to stay behind, Elisha refutes Elijah, and he swears on the living God and on Elijah's life. I mean, that's pretty profound. There's nothing you can do to stop me. I'm sticking right by your side. And some of the things, I don't know how that hits you. You read different commentators, and there's different takes on that position there. I think it's not difficult for us to see maybe what was taking place here when you read the whole chapter. Let me ask you, who made this statement? I'll get you in a minute, Bob. Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge, and your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Who said that?
Ruth.
Yeah. Yeah. Ruth said that to Naomi, didn't she? She said that in Ruth 1:16. I think Elisha has done the same here, as we read in 1 Kings 19:19-21, where he had kissed his family goodbye. I mean, if you remember, you have to think back. But he had bid farewell to his family for a greater cause, for something that was more precious to him even than that. We see similar things. In the New Testament, where people kind of just turned away from everything that seemed to be precious to them and followed who? The Lord. They followed the Lord. It was the apostles. You bet. Elisha, I think, was doing the same thing here towards Elijah. It was absolute dedicated commitment that was in his heart. And now we'll talk a little bit here about why did Elijah charge him that way? Bob, you had something.
One instance that came to mind is reading this. You know, Elijah asked the same question three times. And Elijah said, "Yes, I'm going to stand with you." Reminds me of a confrontation between Jesus and Peter.
Okay.
Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Feed my sheep.
Yeah.
Something very similar here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think those run alongside each other. That's a good thought. I had not thought of that. Thank you for sharing that. So, we see this dedicated commitment, and you know, what's that tell you? Elisha, I have to watch myself because I get their names switched around in my notes, and then I get confused. Elisha had connected his life with Elijah and God's purpose, and he was no longer his own. He was no longer his own. There was only one choice he could make, and that would be to follow Elijah. And I'm really convicted by that. I think that's what he expects of me. And he convinced me by hanging his son on a cross before my eyes and said, in doing that, how much do you love me? Bob, we need to ask ourselves that. Elisha, I think Elijah was testing Elisha's commitment. What do you think? What do you think? Stay behind, Elisha. I'm going here where God told me to go. Was he? I had titled this section, A Test of His Tenacity. You know, just how much all in are you, Elisha? And he was testing him. And time was getting close, wasn't it? A few short trips to some cities, and then there would be the test. And Elijah wanted to be absolutely sure that he was thinking about all of it and that he was the man to take Elijah's place. So in verse 4, God calls Elijah to Jericho. Same request made. Stay here. Same response. No way. I'm stuck to you like glue. And off to Jericho they went. Of course, the Jericho prophets, it seems like the information travels rapidly, doesn't it? They all have the information. And they all say the same thing to Elisha. Seems like God might be involved in some of that. Every place Elisha go, there's a bunch of people. Kind of like when Paul was, I didn't look this up, but when Paul was being urged to not go to Jerusalem. Don't go. This is what's going to happen. You're going to be bound up, you know, and it's not going to be a pretty picture. And, of course, that did not dissuade Paul, did it? Because he had a heart like Elisha's heart, or Elisha had a heart like his. He was bound to Elijah. He was bound to the Lord through Elijah. And then, of course, there's the third dispatch in the verse 6. Now to Jordan, and the third stay here, and the third refusal to stay behind. And off to Jordan they went. So, this testing is taking place. Elisha's probably, maybe he's getting tired of hearing it a little bit. But Elijah's consistent, isn't he? God's persistent with him. I just wonder, wonder what was running through Elisha's mind when he was hearing that. This man that he revered, obviously, and followed around like a pup, you know, as we would too if we had met Elijah. What was running through Elisha's mind when Elisha was hearing that from this man that he loved and respected so much? How would you receive that information? How would I receive that information? Ascend, stay behind. Where's he been with him all the time before this? Right beside him. All of a sudden, it's stay behind. What do you think? This verse, Bob.
Well, the prophecy that's being told to him, he already knows, you know, something's going to happen. He may not know exactly what, but he knows something's going to happen. He's going to lose his master today, and he may have the same thoughts. I'm going to spend every moment I still have with him, and nothing, even the possibility of danger, is going to keep me away from that.
Yeah, okay.
Again, in line with your title, The Test.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I read it. I read it as a test. And Elisha passes. He passes the test with flying colors, needless to say. But this is, you know, Elijah knows. This is no easy. How has Elijah's life been? Piece of cake? Not at all, has it? It's been difficult. And Elisha has witnessed a lot of it. Difficulty, hardship. This is no easy. That's the hard thing part of the statement. He said, what you ask is a hard thing. That later on in the chapter here, tell me what I can do for you. Elijah has experienced plenty of trouble, plenty of discomfort, plenty of disappointment, plenty of threat to his life. Been scared to death and on the run from Ahab and his wife. And Elisha has, he knows about it. He knows about all of it. I can't imagine Elisha thinking that Elijah doesn't want me there. He's had me there all this time. So he probably knows that he's being tested, because Elijah knows what kind of man Elisha is. So he passes a test with flying colors. And that brings us up to verse 7. Anything verse 1 through 6 you want to throw out? Tim.
I've been thinking about the prophets, the sons of the prophets, it says here. And it just seems like going through 1 Kings brought more to mind. Because sometimes we just focus on the major prophets, like Elijah, Elisha, Daniel, Jeremiah, whatever. But God had hundreds of prophets during this time doing his work, and it's just awesome to see that written out. And I was just wondering what the sons of the prophets, in my mind, the sons of the prophets makes it sound like some little kids, you know, saying something they're not supposed to be saying to Elisha or something. I don't know what the sons of the prophets mean. But in his response to them, it also shows me kind of Elisha's attitude about it a little bit, maybe. Like, you know that your master is going to be taken from you today, basically. And says, yes, I know. Be quiet, basically. He's almost viewing that as like a temptation to give up or something. I don't know. But he's saying, stay away from me. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, basically. Something.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the sons of the prophets?
I don't know that it's revealed to us exactly, but I think by the way it's presented to us and in the story, these are people of generation from the prophets that have been trained and been under the tutelage of God's word, and these are people that are privy to things that are going to take place. God's communicating them in some way or another, and
Hey, I was just thinking about how when I was at Christie's and we were going through Amos. Amos said he was just a farmer. He wasn't a son of a prophet or anything. So I think he was making the point it's not in his genealogy that God called him to come do this. So I wonder if he's just saying there's genealogy with the prophets.
Yeah, yeah. That's always how that's what I call kind of a simple understanding, that these are people these are God's people. These are people that adhere to God's word and have been raised under the tutelage of the prophets and the teachings of the prophets. So, anybody got something better, Bob?
The NIV uses the term the company of the prophets. And I wonder if this is one of those Jewish words that could be translated in two or three different ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You say
we'll
it say
says... That for Tommy.
Yeah. Yeah, where are you, Tommy? Okay. I didn't help you much, Tim.
No, you did.
Now I got to go look that up so I can try to fill in the blank there a little bit. Okay, 7 through 10, Elijah's amazing departure. Micah, could you read that for us?
7 through 10.
7 through 10, please.
And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood, facing them at a distance, while the two of them stood by the Jordan. Now Elijah took his mantle, rolled it up, and struck the water, and it was divided this way and that, so that the two of them crossed over on dry ground. And so it was, when they had crossed over, that Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask, what may I do for you before I am taken away from you?" Elisha said,